Welcome to Minute 86 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today on this lovely Sunday, which most of you are not used to actually hearing me on a Sunday, but here you go. You get it this Sunday, and next Sunday you'll also get one. But I'll talk about that a little later. So joining me today is Jeanette Ward of The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome to the show, Jeanette.
Hello, thank you for having me. What a treat to be here on a Sunday.
Yes. This last Sunday of June, you know, a lot of fun. So
weather.
Yeah. Especially, you know, we said Del and Neil about to, you know, go into the warm house. So I guess that works well, mm-hmm. too. You know, going from the fictional cold of this alternate universe where there actually was snow on Thanksgiving in 1987. Into a warm and toasty house, I guess. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. We assume. So, minute 86 begins with Del and Neil approaching the house and ends with Susan smiling. Okay, so we ended things on Friday where basically Neil finally figured out what's going on with Del. He went back, picked up Del and decided to bring him home with him, you know, like a little lost puppy or something like that, and brings him to his house. And we see them walking down the street, and the minute ended on Friday as they were just about to get into the house. And today we continue that, and we see them start walking up the steps to the house.
Both carrying the trunk as they both have in the majority of the movie.
Yes. Yes. But that's still fun, you know?
Yes.
I mean, you weren't here to hear it last week, but we actually discussed what is in the trunk.
I assumed it was shower curtain rings, just piles and piles of shower curtain rings in various colors and sizes and shapes. That's my assumption, because he has a separate bag that seems to have clothes and, you know, assorted sundries in it. So my assumption is that the trunk is exclusively shower curtain rings.
And according to John Hughes' script, you would be very, very wrong.
I also, for a while, because as you know, and maybe no one else knows, this is the first time I've ever seen this movie.
How would anyone else know that until you tell them that?
So this is the first time I've seen this movie. I watched it last night so that it was fresh and I was ready to talk about it. I have not purposefully avoided it. I know it's a lot of people's it's on the list of favorite holiday movies, etc. It never was really in my, you know, I would see bits of it on TV and was like, no, this, I'm not really interested in watching the rest of this. I think you have to be a fan of either the two main leads or, you know, really a huge John Hughes fan. And I think my John Hughes fanship is a little bit different than some of his other stuff. I like a lot of the high school movies. They kind of hit my sweet spot because I was in high school at the time. And this one was just not on my radar, not something I had seen, not one I watch every holiday season. So it was fun to watch it. I can say I don't think my opinion has changed. It's not on my list of holiday movies. Maybe not one of my favorites. I can see why people enjoy it. I'm really happy with the minutes I got because I feel like I got the redemption and the sweetness at the end. There's a lot of and I think it was kind of typical of 80s comedies. It can get really mean. There's a lot of mean moments, yes, in this, but that's typical of the time, and it feels necessary for the sweet redemption at the end. I will say, this is where I started this sentence, which admittedly is already way too long.
we're not checking punctuation, don't worry.
I'm like, oh, okay, good. I immediately guessed, oh, his wife is dead or he's going through a divorce. He has no wife. That's why he's out traveling. Del's character. So I did have a moment where I thought, dear Lord, her body's not in that trunk, is it? Maybe her ashes or something like that. I thought, okay, it's all shower curtain rings, but maybe there's an urn with some ashes in it too, and he's traveling with his wife. Air quotes.
Interesting. No one has. I think maybe towards the beginning we discussed that you know, that maybe there's a body in there or something like that. Maybe I discussed it with Jade in the first episode or something like that. I don't even remember when. It would make sense. But if it wasn't Jay, I
It
apologize to
felt
whichever guest it was that we discussed this, you know.
it felt very obvious to me that he was alone, because his wife was either dead or had left him, and dead seemed to be more likely based on a lot of his. And I think, and I'm sure you've covered this, but my goodness, would this movie have worked with anyone who wasn't John Candy in that role? I don't think it would have. I think that he was uniquely talented in playing the lovable goofball, but also having some genuine, touching,
Yes,
sincerity
completely.
underneath it. And I think that really plays. The reason why I felt very confident saying, well, his wife's obviously dead, is because of the layers to his performance in what could be at the surface very, very single note character. His performance manages to give it layers throughout. And I think that is part of the reason when I say some of it felt really mean. Anytime Neil is mean to him, the facial expressions you get from John Candy make you feel like, oh God, my heart.
Yeah.
Like, yes, Dell is a he's a pain in the ass, and he's too much, and he's all over the place, and my God, he's messy, and but at no point do you hate him, right?
Right.
He stays this kind of aw dude the whole way through, even when he's very, 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 very annoying.
Yes. Now, first of all, I mean, when you listen to all of the episodes that I've recorded already, so then you'll get to hear everything that happened in the original script. This movie is 93 minutes long, the final cut. How long do you think the original cut was?
I read it was 3 hours.
It was 3 hours and 45 minutes.
That's entirely too long.
Apparently
I'm
John
one of
Hughes
those,
felt
like,
that too. And
every movie should be 2 hours, period.
and last week with my guest Travis, we figured out that basically they cut out Die Hard from this movie because it was 132 minutes that they cut out.
I found it interesting, like going back and reading some of the bits about it. One of the things they cut out was a whole explanation of the fact that Michael McKean's police officer is a Wisconsin state trooper, and they overshot Chicago
Yes,
as part of
very
it, and
good.
then he had to turn around and come back. I man,
Yes,
it's
they made it all
specialty
to
a comedy
Oconomowoc.
like this. What
You're
was
a
that?
Wisconsin. They made it all the way to
Yes,
Oconomowoc. Did I get that right?
Oconomowoc. Well,
Oconomowoc.
Oconomowoc.
I'm not able to pronounce
That's
that.
about an hour and a half north of me. Yes.
Yeah. So you see, they drove by your house.
Yes, they must have.
Yeah.
I can't imagine overshooting Chicago by that much. Oh, it'd have been
Yeah.
furious.
I mean, that's one of the ones. Another one we'll actually talk about in tomorrow. Tomorrow's episode, we'll talk a little bit. I'll see if you caught on to another subplot that they cut out. But think about it. They cut out over 2 hours of this movie. That's just of what they filmed. I'm not even talking
I
about that it's
can't
in
imagine,
a script and whatever.
because essentially this is a movie, really, and it's a nothing movie. I mean, it's a movie about a road trip because a guy's flight gets canceled, which anyone who lives anywhere in the Midwest is very familiar with that. Oh my God, the number of flights I've had canceled, delayed, etc. Winter storms, you can't do anything about them. But to pull together a fun and charming, got to get home for the holiday story about a flight being delayed, and essentially taking the odd couple on the road, it works great for the what hour and 33 minutes this movie is.
Yes.
Any longer than that, no.
Right. There's a lot of little scenes that show Dell as being even more annoying, which is why I'm glad they cut it out.
We
You know,
got
they
it.
cut out a
Yeah.
lot of dialogue. Some of it's fun dialogue. There's no question about that. I mean, anyone who's listening to this, if you really want, you can find online the original script and you can read it. It's a lot of fun, especially if you know the characters, because you can hear the characters saying the various lines and stuff like that. But most, I would say 90% of what they cut, they were right for cutting. There's a few things here and there
Yeah.
that they probably should have kept in, but even with that, it's fine. You know, so I'll just fill you in a little bit. What is in the trunk according to the script, right? There's a lamp,
Oh, yes.
some sheets, towels, pictures, a couple pans, fragile things wrapped in newspaper. Obviously, we know he has a pillow in there, and he also has
Pillow,
a
yep.
picture of Marie. Okay, that's basically what he has. It doesn't mention in the script anything about chocolate rings. So maybe the shower curtain rings are in his suitcase.
In the other bag. Yeah. It would That's interesting because he says, I don't have a home. So, and I couldn't figure out if that was figurative or literal, and that he was living out of that trunk, and that's why everything is in the trunk, or if she was his home, and without her, he doesn't have a place he considers to be
It's a
permanent.
combination of
So I
both.
couldn't figure
The
out.
script mentions both
Okay,
of
arc.
those as reasons. You know, that once she no longer
Okay.
was around, he didn't feel the reason to want to stay there, you know, in their home. And so he sold the house. Which also
Correct.
is makes it even more interesting. Why would he travel back to Chicago for Thanksgiving? You know,
Yeah,
like
because
what's
he
in
says he's
Thanksgiving?
going.
What's in Chicago?
Right. Yeah, why is that the destination?
No idea. No idea. Okay, so let's start
All right.
talking about this minute. So
Okay.
as they're standing outside the house, so Dell looks at this house, which is obviously a very beautiful house on the outside, no question about that.
Kind of a stereotypical John Hughes Chicago suburb house.
Yes. On Friday we actually I mentioned the exact address of where that's located and that it was sold in 2012 and for the I don't remember the amount of how much it was sold for, but you know, it was sold and they had a picture in the ad when they were trying to sell it of the characters of Neil and Dell standing outside of it. You know, I guess that you can use that to try to sell things.
To
Why
sell the
not?
house.
Why not?
Sure.
So they start trying to climb, they start climbing up the steps. And it's funny because you see that Neil is having trouble with the trunk. You know, maybe it's too heavy. Maybe it does have a body, as you said. You know, you never know. There's possible. And then Dell says to Neil, oh boy, you are one lucky guy, Neil. And he says, I know. And then Dell says, look, I won't stay long or anything. Maybe I'll just come in and say hi. And, you know, do you think that's what he really meant?
It's from about the halfway point on, Dell is well aware that Neil is annoyed with him and tries from time to time to extricate himself from the situation. He doesn't want to be super annoying. He just can't
Right, but
help
he
it.
also knows at
And so
this point
he's
they're now
trying.
friends. I mean, they hugged
Yes.
when they departed,
Yes.
you know, all those 20 times last week, you know.
So I think he's probably internally, this is just a guess, super excited to have this opportunity to spend Thanksgiving with a family in a home of his new friend, and doesn't want to risk doing anything to lose that opportunity. And so he's just polite in the hopes that Neil will be like, no, of course, come on
Yeah,
in.
well, he knows that he's coming into the
I
house.
love this, the sweetness of the statement, boy, you're a lucky guy. You are one lucky guy, Neil. It's such a sweet and kind statement. And it really, because Neil, throughout the course of the, I mean, and no one plays smarmy, smart ass like Steve Martin. It just, he can really come off as aloof and full of himself in a not arrogant way, but in a just like, well, I know what I have kind of way. And so I think that this line of him, when Dell says you're a lucky guy, Neil, his acknowledgement, yes, I know. It's a little bit of redemption for that character who has gotten progressively more aggressive over the course of the movie. So him acknowledging, like, you know what, I
No, it is
know.
an arc. I mean, he gets really aggressive and then he calms down. You know,
Yes.
he does get grounded afterwards. So it is like a
Empathy,
bell
right?
arc.
Because it would be very easy to have this story, this movie, be only about the hijinks and have no character development, no character arc. And so these two lines, boy, you're one lucky guy, yes, I know. That kind of puts the bow on the arc of both characters and their relationship.
Yeah, completely. Now I like the fact that we can see that the walkway is shoveled really nicely and the sidewalk also and stuff like that. Who do you think shoveled it for them?
Not either of the kids. Those kids are youthful.
There's
Maybe.
three kids. Well, there's three kids. And
Oh, well, one of them's a baby, though, right? So,
yes.
not Matthew Lawrence. I do, because I can't, for the longest time, I was like, why do I know that kid? Who's? Oh, yeah, Matthew Lawrence. Okay. And then, so I'm gonna assume it's a neighbor child, who charged them like $5 to do it.
Okay, that's fair. You see, like I grew up in Michigan, as you know, and you know, just like in Wisconsin, we get a lot of snow there. And My parents, at when we were younger, my parents wanted us to shovel it, and then my parents realized that it's just easier to pay, someone who has a little truck, to clear the driveway and clear off and have a guy get out with a shovel. So I'm assuming they're paying someone to do it here, because
Look at that house. They're not doing anything for themselves. They're paying people to do stuff.
right. No, you see Susan, making food for the kids, and
Oh,
also.
yeah. All right.
Also, he's dreaming. He dreamed last week, that she's making the turkey. Maybe that's just a dream. Maybe,
Oh, that could be. That could be.
maybe they
Smoke
have
some
a,
weed soon. Yes.
maybe they have like a live-in who we don't get to see.
Maybe.
And the live-in is the one who's actually doing all the cooking. Who knows?
Could be. And shoveling.
Yeah. That's true. They go.
I
No, they get another one from them. They get the gardener and I mean, come on. They're two adults and three kids in this
there
humongous
was the
palace.
opportunity, like we've already established, okay, they've put the button on it. This is the nice wrap up, and now we're into the very sweet summary and resolution of everything. But the opportunity was there for one more slapstick moment of one of them sliding on the ice on the driveway.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm glad they didn't do it. I think it would have been a nice opportunity, but I think it works well that they didn't do it.
Absolutely.
So then Dell says, and then I'll be on my way, all right? And then Neil goes, oh, come
To
on,
where?
just come on. What were you saying? Where?
Yeah, to where? He said, well, then I'll be on my way. But to where? We've established you
To
don't
another
have any.
motel?
Yes. And he does, I mean, throughout the course of the movie, he knows someone everywhere. Like he is a excellent salesman, great at his job, really connects with a lot of people, knows someone everywhere. So, he says he'd be on his way probably to another hotel, but to someone else that he knows, an acquaintance, a business partner, a friend.
Right. I mean, I'm assuming that most of his expenses are paid, because of
Probably.
the fact that he's a salesman. So I don't think he needs to worry about it from that perspective.
Yeah.
That he's, the fact that he doesn't have any money. I mean, they don't have money.
Yeah, right.
So I brought that up last week about how did they get on the train, or the subway if they didn't have any money.
Yeah. And no credit cards because those are burned and melted and all their cash is gone. And I don't know.
Yeah,
In
and
any
then
case.
exactly, and then we get a shot from inside the house, and we see the door from the inside, and then we hear the doorbell ring. Which now, do you ring the doorbell when you go home?
This is an excellent question, right? Because I think it comes down to he doesn't have keys. The keys are gone, right? He maybe he had keys, but they are gone along with the money, the credit cards, and but not the money that bought some. Listen.
No, but his daughter doesn't unlock the door. She just opens it, from what I can
Yeah,
tell.
the door is not locked. She just opens it. So were they expecting him? He's
Yeah,
been
she
in
just opens
constant contact with
it.
his wife and letting her know where he's at, what's happening, what state of affairs he's in.
Yeah.
So surely they're expecting him. And there's a lot of windows. They saw him walking up, so they open it. But yeah, you ring the doorbell to let him know you're there. I do not ring the doorbell when I go over to my parents' house. I just walk in, but usually they are expecting me, and the door is unlocked.
Right. Okay. All right. Did you have a key to your parents' house?
I do. I still have keys to
Right.
my parents' house. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. No, so I have keys to my mother's house, and the same thing. I'll go there and I just open the door. I don't want to wait for her to have to, hear the bell and try to have to come, make it easier
Absolutely.
for her and stuff like that. And obviously, when I come to my house, I don't ring the bell.
I don't, but maybe I should start. Maybe that'd be a fun habit to develop for no reason.
I think my wife would kill me if I start doing that. She'd be like, why are you ringing the bell? Just open the door. I don't know. And so then we see that Marty, Neil's daughter, opens the door. And then we see it's a great shot being able to see the door open. And then we see Neil and Della sitting or standing outside, right outside the doorway. And Della is actually holding his hat in his hand.
Yes.
Okay. He has
Hat in hand.
taken off his hat along the way.
He's
You know,
approaching this house,
we actually
hat
see
in hand.
him, we actually see him take it off right before they open door. Okay, from when they're outside. So I decided I was going to actually look up about, when do people take hats off? Like what's proper hat etiquette? Do you have any idea?
You're supposed to always take it off when you go in a house, right?
Yeah, well, I found a lot of stuff, and I was so surprised. I didn't think it would be something. So, I mean, I found an article that basically said that hats are no longer an essential article of clothing, but they once were. And both men and women used to wear hats all the time. And it's important to know when you're supposed to take your hat off, and for what type of occasion and stuff like that. So part of the thing is, and this goes all the way back to one of the first episodes during the first week with Jay, when we were talking about the whole idea of saluting. So part of the idea of saluting is also that you take off your hat. Okay, so medieval knights would either take off their helmet or lift their visor in order to identify themselves. And if they didn't, then someone might kill them. So that's where the original idea of taking a hat off came from. Okay, then a lot of times different types of hats can talk about social standings, or sometimes it's a gesture of respect if you take off your hat. Right? There were in what if you look at it from a religious perspective, so in Christian churches, it was always known that men took off their hats when they would walk into the churches. I mean, me being Jewish, the idea is the opposite, that you actually put a hat on or you have some sort of head covering when you're in some sort of sanctuary. And so in the old days, besides that, people would also when you go to someone's house, you take off your hat when you're greeting your boss or when you're in the presence of a lady. And according to this article, ladies are ex entirely exempt from any hat rules. They can wear them whenever they want and take them off or put them on whatever they want. Didn't make a difference.
I like it. I
And then
like
I
it.
found a list of different types of hat etiquette, of when you can leave your hat on. You can leave your hat on if you're outdoors, if you're at some sort of athletic event, if you're on public transportation, if you're in public buildings, for instance, a post office, airport, hotel, or some sort of lobby. If you're in an elevator, museum fits in
Museum.
there too. If you're on an elevator, you can keep your hat on, and you should take your hat off, including if you're wearing a baseball hat. Okay. If you're in someone's house, if you're at the table during mealtime, when you're being introduced to people, whether it's indoors or outdoors, you should be taking your hat off unless it's completely cold, and then you're allowed to. If you're in a house of worship, as we discussed earlier, unless a hat or head covering is required in that house of worship. If you're indoors at work, you're supposed to take off your hat, especially if you're in an office. And it says that there are many offices that require people to take off their hats, which I don't know if that works these days, but whatever. If you're in a restaurant or a coffee shop, if you're at a movie, or if you're at some sort of performance, you're supposed to take your hat off when you hear the national anthem, which obviously we know about that. And whenever the flag of the US flag passes by, if you're in a parade or anything like that. So then it has a list of times when women can leave their hats on without a problem, right? So it says in someone's home, at luncheons, weddings, garden parties, at religious services, at a movie or indoor performance, horse
Horse
races, there
races.
you go. Move your blimey ass, right? Yes.
Church,
And
because there's church
again, national
hats.
anthem, women don't take off their hats. And if a flag goes by in a parade, they also don't. Okay. And then it has a little note here that if you're wearing a fashion hat, you should take it off if you're blocking someone's view,
Yes.
if you're in the theater or if you're at a wedding or something like that.
Oh.
But I think most people wouldn't really think about who's behind them if they can't see. They're just more concerned with the person in front of them.
Well, I can't help but think about the fascinators that are worn to, is it the Kentucky Derby? Any horse race, which, why are we still horse racing? But I feel like they are part of the event. And yes, most of them are so large that whoever's behind you can't see anything. But they also have to be strategically attached to your head so they
That's
don't
true.
fall off.
So I thought that was just a fun list to quickly go through here.
Yeah. Hat rules.
And then Neil says to his daughter, hey, kiddo. And she screams, Daddy, running to him. And then we have a few seconds of, or 30, almost 30 seconds of introductions. Yeah,
General greetings. General
hey, Griff.
greetings of the extended family that we haven't seen up
Yes,
to this point.
hello, Neil's home. Del Griffith, I want you to meet my father-in-law, Walt. My mother-in-law, Peg. My mother, Joy. Hi. My dad, Martin. Pleasure to see you. Welcome, Del. The big guy's Neil Jr. My little gem's Marty. And somewhere around here is my little baby boy, Seth. So he just quickly introduces everybody, throughout the whole thing. And so I just quickly want to mention the four actors that are in this scene that are not in anywhere else in the movie. They all
Right.
appear much more extensively in the original script. They all have
Oh,
a
sure,
lot more
the 3 hour.
scenes, but not here. And I mean, what's interesting is that when you look at the credits, and we'll probably talk about this later in the week when we get to the credits themselves, but I mean, the guy who plays Susan's father, okay, who's Richard Hurd, is like 10th or 11th down the line or something like that. He's 12th, sorry, he's 12th down the line. Okay, and he's a pretty well-known actor, Richard Hurd. I recognize him. What was funny is that I saw him in the credits here, and I kept thinking to myself, where was he in the movie? I don't remember him. And then I finally figured it out. So, Richard Hurd was an actor who was born in 1932, passed away in 2020 at the age of 87 from cancer. He has 112 TV credits. He was on four episodes of Star Trek Voyager. He was in 11 episodes of Seinfeld. He played Wilhelm, George Boss. He was
Okay.
in two episodes of Quantum Leap, which is a show that I always love. He played a guy who believes that he built a time machine that he can go back in time and make changes. His name was Mo Stein, which was based on the character of Doc Brown in some ways.
Okay,
So it
let me
was.
tell you where I recognized him from. Long Kiss Goodnight. He's the annoying drunk guy that she has to drive home the night she hits a deer and starts to slip back into her other personality.
Right. Okay. That's good. There you go. And then he was also in 36 episodes of T.J. Hooker. He actually played
Yes.
I think the captain.
That
And
would be
then,
the other one.
yeah. And then he has 36 movie credits, which isn't very much if you have 112 TV credits. He was mostly a character actor on TV, but he was a very prolific actor. And one of his final roles was actually in the Clint Eastwood movie The Mule, which came out in 2018. He had a short little role in there also. So that's the guy who plays Neil's father-in-law. Neil's mother-in-law is played by an actress named Diana Douglas, who was born in 1923 and passed away in 2015 at the age of 92, also of cancer. She has 65 TV credits, including she was on 17 episodes of The Paper Chase in the 80s, which I remember was a Showtime show. And then she also has 16 movie credits. Okay, then we have the man who plays Neil's father. His name is Martin, which I think is really funny that they named Steve Martin's character's father Martin. He was played by George Petrie, who lived from 1912 to 1997. He passed away at the age of 85. Once again, also from a form of cancer. He had 126 TV credits, including 10 episodes on Mad About You,
Wow.
which I remember when I was doing the research for this, I recalled who he was. He played one of Paul Reiser's editors that they would sit in and edit together, and they'd have these conversations. And I was really surprised that he was in 52 episodes of Dallas. So, yeah. And then he had 17 movie credits during his career. And then the final link of this quadruplet of parents is an actress named Carol Bruce, who plays Joy, which is Neil's mother. She was born in 1919, passed away in 2007 at the age of 87. She didn't die of cancer. She had chronic Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
Jeez.
So yeah, and she actually has the least prolific career of anyone of these four. She only has 29 TV credits and 6 movie credits. So, I mean, I liked being able to see them here, especially now after having read the script and see the more extensive parts that they have in the story. So it was nice to see them all pop up here, you know. And
Do you happen to know how much of that was actually shot?
it
Was it,
was,
I mean,
from
obviously
what
they
I
were hired
understand.
based on here's a huge script and you've got a lot to do in it, but at the end they get one scene that it was cut down.
From what I understand, they filmed everything.
Oh wow. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. They filmed again. They filmed th the first cut was 3 hours and 45 minutes. That's after they made editing cuts the first time. So it means that they probably could have assembled a movie that was even longer.
So somewhere there's a lot of
But we're
footage of this family arriving at a house, doing all the cooking, getting dressed for dinner,
yeah.
asking where Neil is repeatedly.
They have little conversations along the way. There's some phone conversations and stuff like that.
All right, well.
And then as he's doing these introductions, we actually see a shot of his wife Susan upstairs, because one of I guess Susan's mother calls for her to come down, and she has this complete look of shock on her face that, oh, he's finally home.
She got a very glamorous entrance into the scene.
Yes. Well, no, first they show her upstairs, and then, you know, as Neil is doing the introductions, Dell is, you know, shaking hands with his father-in-law, with the little kids also, and stuff like that. So it's fun to see, you know, Dell with everyone. And then we see Neil look up, and he looks up the stairs and sees his wife, Susan, standing on the stairs on her way down
Yes.
with a nice smile on
A
her
very
face.
soft, glamorous light. And that's it. We can talk about that tomorrow. I have some thoughts on that.
We have more, and we'll see if you were able to figure out what's really going on. Who knows? So, do you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script
No, I
differences?
am, like I said, very grateful I got these minutes. It's warm. It's what it should be at the end of this movie. It is redemption. Not that they needed redemption, but it's a nice coming together of the characters
I
and
think
an
they do need
acknowledgement.
it. I think you're wrong. I think they do need
Well, then
it.
that
Again, it's
redemption
a
is
holiday
redeemed in
movie.
this moment, I feel like in this minute they finally come together. All the craziness that they've been through and the hell they've put each other through kind of gets washed away in this nice, simple arriving at the house warmth of holiday.
Yes. Okay, so now we're going to get into the script, and you're going to see that there isn't as
Oh,
much
no.
warmth as you think. Okay. So it starts off, the scene is completely different here. There's a few of the lines that are similar, but it's almost entirely different what's in the script here. So it says, little Neil's crossing the foyer, headed for the dining room. Sue stomps in from the living room and heads up the stairs. When are we going to eat? Never. Never? Never again? The grandfathers come into the foyer from the living room. Joy and Peg come in from the dining room. Seth stumbles up to Walt and grabs his pants leg. Marty peeks through the grandpa's. What's the fuss? Sue's a little upset. What's the problem? Because Daddy's not here. I'll go have a word with her. Why don't you all go sit down? Joy starts for the stairs. The doorbell rings. Martin, who the heck's calling at this hour on Thanksgiving? Marty bursts through the grandpa's and charges to the door. She grabs at the knob with both hands and pulls it open. Daddy! Neil and Del Griffith are standing at the door, holding the trunk. Hi, sweetie. Peg leans up the stairs and calls to Sue. Susan, Neil's home. Neil and Dell lug the trunk into the house and set it down. Neil closes the door. Did I miss the turkey? We're never eating again. That was little Neil again. What? What the hell happened to you fellas? Dad, this is Dell Griffith. This is my dad, Walt Page. Now, I don't know if you noticed, what was his father's name in the movie?
Martin.
That's right. They switched them.
Yeah, for some
I
reason.
don't know why. I can't figure out why, but they switched them. Dell shakes Walt's hand. Neil introduces everybody to Dell. Dell shakes hands all around. My mother, Peg, father-in-law, Harold, mother-in-law, Joy. This little guy is Neil Jr. This is my little gem, Marty. And he picks up Seth. This is my baby boy, Seth. And then he kisses Seth. Can you say hi? And that's pretty much how that scene ends. So again, they changed around the names of the fathers. Peg is his mother. They switched it completely. I don't know why. Maybe they just figured that the actress was who played, that Richard Hurd looked more like a Walt than a than a
Maybe.
Harold. I don't know.
It does seem like in that there's a little more chaos happening in the house, and that Susan is upset at how long it's taken him to get home. I feel like in the movie, and again, we could talk about that tomorrow, so maybe I'll leave that thought till tomorrow. But it's interesting that they focus a little more on the chaos of the family being there. It makes it more of a focus. The scene as it stands in the movie is the focus is on Neil and Dell arriving. The focus in the script seems to be on the chaos inside the house, which isn't relevant to the story that was told. So
Yes.
that is a smart cut. And I like the idea. I also like the idea that in the movie they seem to arrive early. Like they seem to be getting to the house fairly early on in the day at
Yeah.
9, 10. Maybe the turkey's not yet done.
No. I think they're it's a little
Well, it's
later.
not after dark, I guess, is what I think. It sounds
No.
like in the
No.
script, it
But
almost sounds
you
like it's after dark.
right. Well, it is dusk because when they walk down the street, you see that the lights are on, and the lights are on in the house also. Maybe it's just because it was a
Well,
blizzard that day.
in
I don't know.
Chicago in November, that could be 3 p.m. 2 or 3 p.m.
Yeah, but again, but not in 1987. On November 26, 1987, there was no snow in Chicago.
No, but it starts to get dark right around that time.
Yes. No, it gets dark. I think I figured out that I think it was around 4:45, something like that is sunset, if I remember
Okay.
correctly. So yeah, that makes sense. Right. So normally on an episode on Sunday, which we don't usually do, we don't have any of our top fives. So we're gonna actually do the Hughes Hunt Day segment today. So Jeanette, just so everyone knows, we do a top five movies by John Hughes, which we usually do on Wednesday, which is hump day, but I guess we're gonna call Sunday hump day this week.
Yeah,
So Jeanette,
absolutely.
what are your top five John Hughes movies, working your way from number five all the way back up to number one?
Number five, I started with one that he wrote, not one he directed, so I put Pretty in Pink at number five.
Okay.
And then from then on, the top four are all things he
No,
directed, I think.
it doesn't matter. We
It doesn't matter, but I just,
we're not
as a
sticklers
clarification.
to that.
Number four, I put Weird Science. Super fun, super entertaining. 3 16 Candles. Like I said, I was drawn a little more to his high school ones based on the timing. The top two really you can interchange depending on the day and the mood. The
Depending on
Breakfast
whether
Club.
you're in Shermer, Illinois, or if you're in Chicago.
Right. The Breakfast Club is an exceptional movie, endlessly watchable. I love that movie. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, though, is my all-time favorite, and it is one where I think really holds a stronger pull to anyone from this area in that who is my age. It was in high school at that time.
Of course.
Actually, I was this might have been grade school for me, but the idea, like, we had multiple Ferris Bueller days off. Like, it became a thing once I hit high school. You take a day off, go down to Chicago, go to the museums. It was a thing. So I love that movie. It's such an adventure, and it's so fun and lighthearted while still being like, hey, this kid really cuts cool. But yeah, that one is my favorite.
I had two friends in high school that would always make these trips. They would go from Detroit to, they would go to Cleveland, or they'd go to Toronto. And so they once went to Toronto, and one of them called up his parents from Toronto and said, "We went bowling." No, they didn't. The parents didn't know they went to Toronto, right? So he said, "I just bowled a 130." And he like called his parents with this like super duper lie in order to try to make it feel even more plausible that. So,
I feel like that's similar. Toronto is what, 4 hours past Detroit? Maybe three?
I think it was like a 5-hour drive, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Because I've driven from here to Toronto, and I think it was about 10. I know it's about 6 to get to Detroit from here, which I've done multiple times. I went to school in Holland,
Oh,
Michigan.
okay.
So for us, we did it in college too. Came down to Chicago and had a couple of Ferris Bueller days. So yes, it is. It's a thing. It's a perfect
Okay,
movie.
makes sense. No question about that. But just fun to think about. All right, so again, because Jeanette is only going to be with us for 2 days this week. So once again, we're going to change things around a little bit, and we're going to have her give us her top five John Candy movies. So we're going to do Weekend Candy on Sunday, which still fits in because it's Weekend Candy, even though it's
Still
not
weekend, yeah.
Friday. So why don't you give us your top five John Candy performances?
This one's a little tougher for me. Just because, again, he had a very specific skill set, and that's not something I'm a huge fan of, but there are several on the list that I enjoyed. So I put the Blues Brothers on there. It's a small role, but I put the Blues Brothers on number 5, Splash, number 4, Spaceballs, number 3. Always entertaining. That's one where inevitably it's on TV every weekend, some random channel at some time, and I will stop and watch a few minutes of it every time it's on. I really enjoy Spaceball. Cool Runnings, because listen, that movie really the reason the Jamaican bobsled team gets funding is still that movie. They were at the Winter Olympics this year, finished, I think, if not last, second to last, but the reason they continue the legacy
John
of
Candy.
the Jamaican bobsled team, it was, yeah, absolutely. Well, so I that movie is fun and love it. And then I put The Great Outdoors as number 1. Saw that when I was younger. It was something I saw with my family, and I still make obscure references to it in my family to this day. So I definitely put that one up there.
Excellent. Great. So now we will do the segment that we do every day. We have the Off the Beaten Track segment, which either myself or my guest will give a little adventure or misadventure that has happened to us over the journey of life. So Jeanette, you have a story for us?
Yeah, I have a lot of travel stories, but this is one in college. I did a main term, so 3 weeks studying in London. It was an art history tour, so it was we get there and it was every day was a different art museum, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then the weekends were kind of ours to do with as we chose. And one of the weekends, a group of us headed up to Scotland. We were like, well, we'll just go up to Scotland for the weekend, no big deal, because at this point we'd been in London for a couple of weeks and we figured we knew everything about everything. We're like, yeah, we'll just take a train up to Scotland, no problem. So
Why not?
8-hour train trip up to Scotland, made it up to Edinburgh. Hung out there for a bit and then took another train up to Inverness, which is a city right there at the edge of Loch Ness. And then from there went up to Aberdeen, which is kind of at the top. Loch Ness is very long and skinny, and I believe that Aberdeen is at the top of it. So very cold, very misty, definitely in the Highlands of Scotland. My friend and I were very
Even in
into
May?
it. Yes. Yeah,
Wow.
we were very into Highlander at the time, and so we're like, obviously we have to go to the Highlands, and so we got up there. But we didn't have a plan, and the train trip being 8 hours, longer than any of us expected, got there at night, with no place to stay, no game plan, didn't know what we were doing, got off the train, standing around with all of our luggage for the weekend, like, all right, well now what do we do? And for some reason, everyone looked to me, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Why am I suddenly in charge? Shouldn't someone else have thought of it? I was there with two or three, like I was I think a sophomore or a junior at the time, and there were upperclassmen there. I'm like, why didn't you guys plan for this? And so I had to come up with a solution. I pulled out a phone book because at the time, phone books were still a thing. Not to cell phones yet. None of us had mobile phones. So pulled out a phone book, flipped through it, went to bed and breakfasts. The first one I found called, was like, I'm so sorry. We just got off a train. We need a place to stay. She was like, no, I'm all booked up. Called another one. No, I'm all booked up. No rooms. I'm like, God, this is, we're going to be wandering around the streets of Aberdeen for the entire night. The third one I called was like, no, we're booked, but try this guy. He lives up the street from me. So I called this guy. He and his wife ran a small bed and breakfast. And I'm not going to try and do the Scottish accent, but by all means, imagine it here as thick as you can possibly be, to the point where I had to ask him 2 to 3 times, I'm so sorry, I didn't catch that. Could you please repeat it? He said, I said, there's four of us. Me and my four, we're all women. We're standing here on the side of the road. We don't know what to do. He was like, yeah, I got rooms. Where are you? I'm like, I don't know. I'm at payphone. Because at this
And
point,
you can't send him a
no,
GPS,
this is, again,
No,
before
I
all of
know
that. So this is, kids, this
that.
is what traveling was like before cell phones existed. So I say, he goes, "Well, what are you around?" I said, "We're standing across from a church," which, if you've ever traveled anywhere in Europe, that doesn't help anyone. There's a lot of churches. So he said, "Describe the church," and I said, "It's got, it's tall." And hey,
It's got this big
I
cross.
did swear. The key is on this midterm, being an art history student could accurately describe the church in terms of the buttresses, the windows, and the door and the architecture. And he said, "I know exactly where you are. Stay there. Don't talk to anyone else. I'm going to come get you." This man got in his stage
Wow.
wagon, drove up this hill, picked all four of us up, put our luggage in his car, drove us back to his bed and breakfast. We got rooms for the night, and he told us, "All right, in the morning you come down, I'm making you guys breakfast." Had the best breakfast I've ever had, and this guy told us stories, just the best stories, in the thickest Scottish accent. Absolutely hilarious. Told us, he was like, "Yeah, where are you guys from?" "The States." And we were, "Well, the Midwest." And he told us about a guy who had come from Texas who was loud and obnoxious. And he asked the guy where he was from. And the guy said, "Texas, in the United States." And the guy said, "So I said to him, 'Oh yeah, the colonies.'" So there you go. That is my first story.
That is a good story.
Nearly
That's a
getting
lot of
lost
fun.
in Scotland, but successfully making it to a bed and breakfast and having a wonderful trip. So yes, there you go.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much for that. So, Jeanette, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, of course. I'm on all the socials. You can find me on all the social medias out there with the kids, except for the TikTok. Haven't wandered into that realm yet. I'm too old. But you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Jeanette Y Ward mostly. You can find my movie reviews over at The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl, which is jwardadventures.blogspot.com. And that's where you can find me.
Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to our website. So, Jeanette, you want to come back in tomorrow and talk a little more about Susan on the Stairs?
Yes, I have thoughts about Susan on the Stairs.
All right. Great. So, until tomorrow, you're fine.
You are fine.